I'm not the greatest singer, but I'm gonna do this. Where has all the science gone? Long time passing. Where has all the science gone? Long time ago. Where has all the science gone? Gone to disbelief, everyone. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn?
Oh, you'll clap for anyone then.
I wanted to do this sermon because at least it helps me to understand how we got where we are now through Trump and the whole bit. And looking back, and I began thinking about this back in 2015. I was serving a congregation in California, in Southern California, and some of the members of the church weren't able to come to church, so I went where they were. And Mark Diamond brought an issue of National Geographic, and he was all upset. And the title of it was The Age of Disbelief. Now, this is 2015. And the subtitle, skepticism about science is on the rise, and polarization is the order of the day. What's causing reasonable people to doubt reason? It's the question we face. If you find this hard to believe, consider this litany. Think the moon landings were faked? Go online. You'll find plenty of people who agree. In a display at the Creation Museum in Petersburg, Kentucky, Adam and Eve share paradise with a dinosaur. I have friends that have seen that. A third of Americans believe humans have existed in their present form since time began. Only 40% of Americans accept that human activity is the dominant cause of global warming. Nearly two-thirds of Americans want creationism based on the book of Genesis to be taught in our public schools along with evolution. However, and here's the kicker, half of Americans can't name Genesis as the first book of the Bible. Half. One out of every five Americans still believes that the sun revolves around the earth. 2021. It appears that Americans have placed science on par with folk beliefs. Half of American adults believe in ghosts, one-third believe in astrology, three-quarters believe in angels, and four-fifths believe in miracles. How Joel Auchinbach opens his article in National Geographic is a fun but telling summary of this age of disbelief. And a lot of you will recognize this. There's a scene in Stanley Kubrick's comic masterpiece, Dr. Strangelove. And I love that. I watched it again and again. In which Jack D. Ripper, an American general who had gone rogue and ordered a nuclear attack on the Soviet Union, unspools his paranoid worldview and the explanation of why he drinks only distilled water, only rainwater, and only pure grain alcohol. To Lionel Mandrake, a dizzy with anxiety group captain in the Royal Air Force. Ripper, have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water? Mandrake, yes, I've heard of that, Jack. Yes, yes. Ripper, well, do you know what it is? Mandrake, no, I don't know what it is, no. Ripper, do you realize that fluoridization is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we've ever had to face. The movie came out in 1964, by which time the health benefits of fluoride have been thoroughly established and anti-fluoridization conspiracy theories could be the stuff of comedy. So you might be surprised to learn that half a century later, fluoridation continues to incite fear and paranoia. In 2013, citizens in Portland, Oregon, one of only a few major cities that don't fluoridate their water, blocked the plan by local officials to do so. Opponents didn't like the idea of the government adding chemicals to their water. Does that sound familiar? I don't want the government putting medicine in my arm. And last, but by no means the least important, is the vaccine backlash in America. See, this is not new. 46 states allow religious exemptions from vaccination requirements, and 19 states allow philosophical ones. Anti-vaccine activist and actress Jenny McCarthy famously said on Oprah Winfrey's show, "The university is Google, is where I got my degree from." Seriously. And here we all are, trying our best to survive a pandemic that just won't go away. What are we to make of this? Are Americans simply stupid, unintelligent, and dim-witted? After all, 42% of American college graduates never read a book after graduation. 42%. 80% of American families did not buy a book in the last year. I'm showing my prejudices, aren't I? Nonetheless, to call Americans stupid, unintelligent, and dim-witted is too easy in an answer, a dead end of sorts. In thinking about all this, I reflected on my dad. He was a very successful podiatrist. However, all he really knew was his profession and his medical journals. He knew very little of literature, poetry, plays, or the visual arts. All he really knew was his profession. Now, thinking of my dad in this way led me to remember one of my favorite books from the college history classes, Richard Hofstadter's Anti-Intellectualism in American Life, 1963. And while I'm name dropping authors, there's an excellent update to Hofstadter's classic, Susan Jacoby's The Age of American Unreason in a Culture of Lies. I stumbled upon Jacoby's book at a member's home while serving our congregation in Laguna Beach, California. I'm glad I picked it up. It's an excellent book. But let me get back to my dad and his inexperience with the liberal arts. Anti-intellectualism, according to Hofstadter, is, and I'm quoting, a resentment of the life of the mind and those who are considered to represent it, and a disposition to constantly minimize the value of that life. I remember my parents saying that Kennedy was too smart to be president. Hofstadter is very clear in his insistence that Americans are not dumb. There is great intelligence in Americans, just as there is great professionalism. However, this professional intelligence is mostly mechanical and functional, utilitarian, if you will. Consequently, many Americans fall under the spell of what Hofstadter calls the mystique of practicality. In the past 11 years, the University of Minnesota, the University of Iowa, and the State University System of New York have advanced the long-running trend of slashing funds for the humanities and cutting general education requirements for their undergraduate students. Only 8% of American college students now major in the humanities. Hey, Junebug, find a seat, man. Only 8% now major in the humanities. So what are the political implications of all this? And what I mean by political implications is our life together as a nation. That, my friends, is what politics is supposed to be about. Susan Jacoby warns that most Americans don't know how many Supreme Court justices there are. According to Newsweek, 70% of Americans have no idea what their country's most important historical, political, and legal document even is. 70%. And of course, I'm talking about the US Constitution. 70% don't even know that. Many politicians who supported the second Iraq war later changed their minds, explaining, "We were lied to." And they said to the public, "You were lied to." But the deeper conversation we need to be having, Jacoby sagely asked, is why were Americans so willing to be lied to? Not only average citizens, but politicians. Of course, Trump's presidency and the insurrection at the US Capitol takes this question to a whole other disturbing level. Roper polled Americans between ages 18 and 25. Only 23% of college-educated young people could find Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, and Israel on a map. Only 23%. And it wasn't a blank map. It meant that they really didn't know where the Middle East was. 23%. This has something to do with why, as a country, we have shallow political discussions. We as a people living in a democracy have not lived up to our obligation to learn what we ought to learn to make informed decisions. We can't learn what we need to know from 5-second sound bites. We can't learn what we need to know from a quick hit on the internet. And we can't learn what we need to know in a world of quick judgment and shallow analysis, which is where we live. We can only learn the things we need to know from talking to each other, from reading books and articles, My Prejudice, and from careful analysis. We all need to know a lot more than what we know. We've become satisfied with too little. We've become satisfied with the lowest common denominator. It's not good enough when only 23% of our young people who have had some college can find these countries on a map. We all need to be able to find these countries on a map. Richard Hofstadter wrote, "The preference for vocationalism is linked to a preference for character or personality over the mind and for conformity over individuality and talent." If you notice this, I remember growing up as a little kid, Americans were much more conforming than when I was growing up. Much more. I mean, we weren't conforming, but anyway, we weren't conforming. It's just, this is over my lifetime, this has kind of happened in America. 20 years ago, the kind of the things that go on politically, Americans would just say, this is not right. And they got in the streets. This preference leads, as Hofstadter warns, to the lowest common denominator criterion of thought and technician conformity of lifestyle. Americans in staggering numbers are expressing their preference for conformity over individuality and talent. The America we are creating is one where poetry is rare, philosophy is suspect, and science is placed on par with folk beliefs. While the infrastructure necessary for the creation and maintenance of greatness crumbles. I close with Thomas Jefferson. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. Our benediction. If we have any hope of transforming the world and changing ourselves, we must be bold enough to step into our discomfort, brave enough to be clumsy there, loving enough to forgive ourselves and others. May we, as a people of faith, be granted the strength to be so bold, so brave, and so loving. Amen and blessed be.